Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Creating 2D Games with GameMaker. This is the Advanced Techniques session. I'm Natalie.
And my name is Daniel. I'm a developer evangelist in Southern California. I've been doing game development for about 2 years now. Before that, I was a traditional, you know, run-of-the-mill enterprise developer before joining Microsoft. But about 2 years ago, I decided, hey, it'd be really fun to build a game. And so I hunkered down and learned how to develop games. Built a game called Dave in the Cave. It's 20 levels of cave fun. And it's on all three platforms, so whether you have a Windows 8 phone or whether you have an iPhone or an Android, you can get in on any of those. And I had a ton of fun doing it, and I want to share some of that fun with you today.
Cool. I'm Natalie Golovornis, also a technical evangelist, and I live in Dallas, Texas. So like Daniel, I work with students, startups, and game developers. So I've been at Microsoft for about 2 years now, also with a focus on game dev. So before Microsoft, I did have experience working at some other game companies, but I wouldn't have really considered myself a developer. But recently at Microsoft, I published my first game called Mysterious Mushrooms. So you can check that out.
It's very mysterious.
Also, yes, very mysterious.
And lots of mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, nice. So we're glad you can join us today. You're watching this on MVA, and I think it's really important to actually join the MVA community. There's a lot of cool stuff out there. You can get points. There's leaderboards. So while you're doing this and while you're checking this out, make sure you check out the MVA community and sign up. You can see the codes on screen for that. Remember that it expires 4/19/2015, so you want to make sure you do that. Some of the resources that you'll need for today, GameMaker Studio, of course, there's a free edition, and I think everything that we're showing you today, you can do in that. We're going to be working with Spine today, so previously we created characters using Inkscape, which is a great open source program to create 2D animations and stuff, but today we're going to take those sprites that we created and work them in Spine, and so go ahead and download Spine. And if you're just jumping into this session today and haven't seen our previous GameMaker session that we recorded a while back, go ahead and check out that link that you see there, aka.msgmmva1, and you can see the previous one we did, which was a little more basic GameMaker stuff. You want to share the agenda of what we're doing today?
Yeah, Ellie? We've got some fun things planned today. We're going to start doing scripting your game using the GameMaker language, and then we'll do animation using Bones and Spine. After that, we'll look at advertising analytics for your game, so how you can get some revenue.
Making money and find
out
how people are using it.
Yes, all that really awesome stuff, and how you can look at all the revenue you're getting from that. Then we'll look at optimizing for Windows 8, so touchscreen controls and saving data, and the Windows Store as well. So we'll take little breaks in between each of these things, about 10 minutes here and there. So,
cool. So let's jump right into the first module. So in this module, it's called Scripting Your Game Using GameMaker Language. And just to preface it, the goal of this section is not really to teach you GameMaker language in 20 minutes. That would be like trying to teach you C# or JavaScript in a 20-minute session. But it's more to get you situated with how it works in GameMaker, give you some pointers, give you some places to start. GameMaker actually has a nice tiered way of using GML language. You can use it as just little pieces in your game, or you can script your whole game in it. So that's our goal in this section, to give you a taste of what the GameMaker language is about.
You don't need any programming experience, right?
You know, that's a good question, whether you need programming experience or not. I would say if you have absolutely zero programming experience, I would use the drag and drop. GameMaker is great for that. Drag and drop still has some of the constructs of how programming works with the loops and the variables and stuff. If you have zero programming experience, the GML part of it might be a little tough if you're starting from absolute scratch.
That's so, good to know.
Yeah, so to kind of bring you into where we were, so the first section, or modules that we did a while back. And again, you can see the link to it. We walked through some of the basics, how the IDE works, how sprites work in it, how objects work in it. We modified a few rooms. And so we kind of dove around and got you used to the IDE. So again, if this is your first time in GameMaker, go check that out, because we're not going to go back. In today's sessions, we're going to dive right in. And so in this one, we're going to talk about learning to use GML and variables in GameMaker. And then after that, we're going to jump into state machines. And so we want to start with learning GML. So I already have the GameMaker open. So the interesting thing about GameMaker language is Mark Overmars, who created GameMaker a long time ago to work with his students, so his students were able to build games easily. Originally had it as drag and drop, and then he added GML as an afterthought, the GameMaker language as an afterthought, to do some tiny advanced stuff. But GML has actually taken over. One of the things you'll notice if you're going to the forums, if you're looking at getting help in the forums, is most people out there are doing GameMaker language, so they will be able to help you with GameMaker language. There'll be a little less help if you're just doing pure drag and drop, but there's a lot of good stuff out there. Let me show you a game to start. Let me see which one I have open. Let's go to this one. I'm just gonna run it so you can see, you know, when I'm showing you code, it's not as dynamic, so you can see when I'm doing stuff, what's happening. So you can see I have a little character, goes left and right, goes up and down, he can jump. There's platforms here.
I like that little tree climbs up.
Yeah. I like the little rope. Actually, I like the little skeletons when you crush their head. I mean, we could just do this for 25 minutes if you want, see how good I am. But that's the game that we're looking at. So when we're looking at code, it's something tangible. It's something, and this is, it has three levels. But let's go ahead and open a version of that, because I want to compare the two. This is almost this. This is the beginning of this, and I'll show you the room. It's kind of the beginner stages of that game. And the reason I want to show you this in today's session is kind of do a comparison. You'll see me do this a couple times as we're going through it today. If we look in the room itself, you'll see that I have a little guy in there, and let's do Alt 1. Go down to the bottom here. You'll see that in this room I have a object player drag and drop. Now that's because this individual player, this object over here, my main guy in the game, has all his actions, all his events, everything was done by dragging and dropping. So if I look at the create event, which is what happens when this guy is instantiated, again, even if you're doing drag and drop, the beauty of this is you're learning programming stuff, you're learning instantiation, you're learning variables, you're learning width, you're learning a lot of stuff. So you can see that I'm creating variables over here on the side to set image speed, to set image index, the set is health to 100. Over here in the step, I'm using an if statement. So I'm checking to see if position is collision free, et cetera. When I go left, I'm gonna jump left, et cetera. But if I open up the player drag and drop, you'll see a couple things. If I open up the player that has the GML, you'll notice that I still have all the events over here. And this is a really interesting thing. This is what I meant by a tiering in GameMaker. You can learn to code very slowly in GameMaker. You can pattern how you do it in drag and drop and just do little pieces of code. You'll notice over here on the right-hand side when we have controls, in the drag and drop you saw the move controls and jumping controls, the sound controls, room controls, but in the control tab itself, there's two different things under code. One of them is going to execute a piece of code, and one of them is going to execute a script. And if I drag that on there, you'll see that it allows me to call a script. Now, these are scripts that you'll find over here in your scripts folder. So you can take a piece of code that someone else has written or a script that someone else has written that will enhance your game and make it that much cooler. So this is like the baby step to writing code, where you can actually call a script, but you can still tell it's still kind of drag and drop. You have to know a little bit of scripting because you need to know the arguments that are in that script and what to call, but it allows you to kind of take that baby step. The next thing, though, is just execute a piece of code. So if I click on here, this guy isn't that complex, but you can see just like the drag and drop, I'm setting image speed. I'm setting image index. And the speed is how fast the animation in the object is going. The index is what index to start it on. So if there's the animation is made up of four or five different things, which one do you want to start on? Zero would be the first. And you can choose that to be whether he's standing straight or his legs up in the air. You decide, obviously, depending on the character. But you can see I can write code to write these variables in here. So not much different between the two yet. Again, you can look at the step event. Now, the step event, if you haven't done a game before, the step event is your game loop. This is going to run 30 to 60 times a second. So this one's checking to see, basically, if I'm in the air. It's checking to see if place is free. And it's checking my x coordinate and my y coordinate. Or right under me and see if there's anything under me. If there's not, it's going to set gravity to 0.5 and it's going to drop. Again, in this section, we're not going to be talking about every little piece. How does gravity work? How does place free work? One of the cool things, though, is like many other programs, you can look at pieces of code that are color-coded. So these things are code that is, I'm sorry, the yellow is code that is part of the GameMaker language. This red here is code that is reserved words. Things like gravity and stuff are reserved words, so they're colored differently. But if I want to know how this works, I can just hit F1 to go to the help, or if I hit F12, it'll actually take me right to that one. And so I can look, I can see an example. Usually there's a little more explanation here than this one, but this one's pretty simple. If the place I'm looking at is free, then I want to do something. And you can do that with any code that you find in there. Okay, let me jump into a little bit more complex. So the stepping stones are just calling a script. You can write GML just calling a script. The next one is, you'll notice that I have things here for going left, going right, or going up. And I have script in there. And it's a very simple script. If place is free, set my V speed, I want to move to the right or the left, et cetera. And so that's the second step. You're still kind of compartmentalizing them by doing them in events. You're just writing code for them. You're not getting much benefit doing it this way because the benefit you're going to get is it's a little easier to read and write code than it is if you have a ton of drag and drop things in here. But if we take it one step further.
You can also mix the two, right? You could do some things, drag and drop, and some of it with the GML, right?
You absolutely can. And actually, when I first wrote Dave in the Cave, I did it originally in drag and drop. And as it got more and more complex, the drag and drop functions got more complex. And actually, I'll show you that really quickly. This guy's so simple that I can see everything that's going on here. But a complex game like Dave in the Cave, if I did it all in drag and drop, this keeps going down and down and down and down.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep organized, and it's hard to really remember what's going on, and it's hard to jump to a certain place in your code. Because I can search through scripts, but I can't search through drag and drop. Those are some of the trade-offs that you're going to do. But there's on the flip side of that, there's not much you cannot do in drag and drop that you can do in GML, because the drag and drop actually at the end of the day spits out GML to run the code, so it's essentially the same under the covers.
So you can get by with drag and drop, it'll just be a bit more tedious.
Absolutely. And there's optimizations you can do, and actually let me show you a little bit of Dave in the Cave. So you saw the step event for that other game. If we look at the step event for my game, you can tell, and I'll just page through here, there's a lot more complexity. What's going on every 30 times a second? There's what, 200 and 300 lines of code in here. And if we just kind of look at what's going on, I'm doing things like I have a joystick. And let me, actually, I think I can show you what that is. And we're going to talk about touchscreen controls later today. But I'll show you, just so you can connect what I'm showing you in code to the game itself. We'll go ahead and run this quickly. If it cooperates with the not responding, and comes up quickly.
There it is.
So I split my screen in two. So you can see I have, wherever I touch on this side, there's a joystick control, up, down, left, right. And on this side, actually, if I, you know, would touch it, it makes them jump. I've also been able to, I can use keys as well. And I think I use the space bar for this. So the same code works whether I'm using a keyboard or not. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to show you that to show you the...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, to show you what code we're actually looking at. And I think it minimized down here. There we go. And so right here, I'm checking an object that's outside of here. You know, things you can't do in just drag and drop. This is a object joystick, and that's the joystick is sending me back which direction I'm pointing. And depending on which way I drag it, it's going to tell me either left, right, up, or down. And from that, I'm just doing a simple switch statement or a case statement that you would have in VB to whatever type of programming environment you're used to. And in the case statement, I'm doing simple stuff like I'm checking if there's a ladder. And if there's not a ladder, I'm not doing anything. If there is a ladder, I'm checking to see if it's a rope type ladder or a ladder type ladder in my game, obviously, setting different speeds. You notice here, and this is something really, really important. You notice right here I have D-state ladder rope, or D-state ladder. I have a bunch of other states in here, and we'll talk about state machines later, D-state jump. You'll notice if you look at my code, and some of it's maybe not the best. You're always worried about showing your own code, right? Because there comes a point where you just need to get stuff done. But coding in GML, you want to make sure that you're very, very particular on your naming standards. You'll notice a lot of developers or code that you get maybe on forums have a lot of X's and Y's and J's and zeros and ones to stand for stuff. And in a very small game, you can get away with that. But if this is state is equal to 3 or state is equal to 16, you know, or whatever, it's or X is equal to 16, it gets to be really, really messy code. So one of the things you want to make sure you do is be very clean in your writing. Mm-hmm. And we can go through this more and more, but you can see how complex this can get going through here.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and close this. But again, if you're used to C# or JavaScript, you'll be very comfortable in GML. Oh, you can get... actually, that's one thing I wanted to show you. I think I have one in here. Do a control F. Show debug message. So this is a really important thing. One of the things in Game Maker that was a bit challenging to me and maybe challenging to C# developers out there if you're a C# developer, is there's no try-catch. So there's no global catching system that you may be used to. And so you're going to have to spend a lot of time doing the old ASP.NET response.write type of coding. So you'll see that I have a show debug message. And here I'm passing it, you know, different stuff. This is whether it's on a ladder, whether it's not, et cetera. And some of this I uncommented out. And I should remove, I actually removed in the main game. And when you do that, it's going to show in this tiny window here. Let's see if we have any. So these are some debug stuff, the object stuff that you see down here. Let me do control 4 so you guys can see this a bit better. This is not going to mean much to you, but in the compile window down here, not only will it do the compile stuff, but it's also going to show you any debug messages that you want to send up here. I don't see any at the bottom here, but that's where it would show off. So that's something you want to make sure that you understand and you use regularly, because you're not going to be able to catch everything. So I think for GML, the next thing I actually wanted to show you is to talk about variables. And there's three different types of variables. There's the instance type variables, and let me actually pop something up here. So any variables that I just implicitly declare in here will be belong to this instance. So I only have one player at a time. So there's only going to only be one instance, but I might have more than one monster at a time. And so an instance variable will be part of that instance. Now, if I wanted it to be taken away as soon as it's used, I can make it a local one. And I don't need it for this, but if I put a var in front of it, it makes it a local variable. And the local variable allows you to get rid of it as soon as you're done with it. Obviously, the cleaner your code, the better. The better it will run if you don't have things you're not using in memory. And then finally, we have a global variable. So a global variable can get dangerous. Global variables in JavaScript, the same way. If you have too many globals, it can get really, really messy. But sometimes you need to, everywhere in your game, see when things are going on. And so you can set a global variable. And quite easily, all you do to set that is do global dot whatever you want to create the variable name is. And it, it allows you to access it from anywhere in the code. And then the final thing, kind of hidden. I don't want to save that. We're going to close this. And at the bottom of our tree here, we have what we call macros. And I'll go ahead and open that up. And this is where I'm able to create constants. So dstate stand is always equal to 0. Dstate walk is always equal to 1. Dstate climb is always equal to 4. You can see I have constants for a ton of stuff, max H speed, max fall speed, skid speed. And this does two things. One, it creates very clear code. So as I showed you in the code, you can very clearly see that I was looking to see if I was on a ladder, and if I was, I set my state equal to, you know, on a ladder. It also allows you to write code that's not brittle. And what I mean by that is you see I have max horizontal speed set to 8. Well, if I'm setting the max speed in my code a bunch of times to 8, and then somewhere along the line I decided 9 was better, I have to find all those different places in the code to change it. Where with my game, if I wanted to globally change the max speed to 9, I change it in one place and I'm done. And so those are macros, and if you are a programmer, these are like using constants. So those are some things that hopefully can get you started using this. Now, one of the things I mentioned in the last section was that you saw I had states in there. I had walking state and other state. And even though I called it state, they weren't really state machines. And so I want to quickly cover what state machines and how they help you here in GameMaker. So let's go ahead and I'm going to open up a really cool game. Some of you might know this, some of you might not. Let's open this one.
I wonder if I've seen this.
Yeah, we will see.
Did you make this one too?
I did not make this one. This is a remake of a classic game. So Zool is an old-time classic game. And Zool just is in Candyland, and he has to kill people and grab stuff, and you can see he dies. The reason I have this is there's a book out, Game Maker Companion. There's two really good ones, Game Maker Apprentice and Game Maker Companion. One of them is written by Mark Overmars, who created Game Maker, and that's one of the games in it. And inside of it, they actually have, I have a GML version, which is really cool to compare as well, since we're talking about drag and drop versus GML. So if you really want to see how to, because this is a very complex game, here's a great example. In Object Zool, in his draw event, you can see this is just starts to get crazy and farther and farther and farther down. And so one of the things that a lot of game developers do, I actually decided against it. I started with that in Dave and then went away from it. is what's called a state machine. So you can see that there's five different zools. So there's an object zool, and if you're used to programming, this is like the parent object. So all the objects above him, so if we look at object zool land, his parent is object zool, and what that means is everything that happens in that base one will happen in him. But he's the one that's on land, so all the code that I have to have in here has to deal with when he's on land, when he's walking, when he's right, when he's left, when he's on a ledge, when he's on a ramp. Now the one in the air, again, gets his parent from object zool, so all that has, but he's only concerned with when he's in the air. So you can see we're setting gravity, we're determining when we're actually hitting something, hitting a ledge or going through a ledge. And again, we have one for when he's on a wall and when he's on ice. So that's a state machine, and state machines allow you to, another programming thing, separate concerns. So it allows you to compartmentalize pieces of your code in a way that doesn't get unwieldy and doesn't get crazy where you can't find stuff. State machines allow you to switch from state to state and keep what has to do with that state in one nice little box. It also gives you the ability to, like I said, get inheritance in a way by having a parent object like object zool.
Yeah, it sounds like it would help keep things clear for sure.
It is, and it does. When I was working with Dave in the Cave, I originally started with state machines, and I went away from it because you have to balance the complexity with the jumping back and forth and managing the different states. And so I ultimately decided to have one, as you saw, one object character instead of different states, and I decided to set states using constants. But either way, mine's kind of a cheating state machine, I guess you can say, but either way, it allowed me to decide what to do with the character depending on what state he was. So that is all we had for this module. Hopefully it gave you a good indication of how to use GML, where to start, you know, have the different baby steps of how to get there, and actually how to use state machines and utilize variables. We hope you enjoyed it. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll see you back here for the next module.